Heath.
Wolf spun back with a hiss, and Adam released his hand, but there was blood. Adam flattened his ears, stepping between me and Wolf. He wasn't quite snarling, but he'd made his position clear.
"Do you see this?" Wolf said. "Abomination. Wolves do not run with coyotes."
"It's a romance as old as time," soothed Coyote. "Rules are set up for the good of society, but as soon as you make a rule, someone feels the need to break it. If it helps, most werewolves mate with humans. Even worse, I would think, than one of my coyotes."
Wolf took a step toward Adam.
"She is your mate?"
I couldn't tell if that made it better or worse, and I don't think Wolf knew either. His hand had quit bleeding already. Adam hadn't done much more than break through the skin. It had been a warning, and not a real attempt to hurt Wolf. I'd like to think that Adam was too smart to take on something like Wolf, but I was afraid that wasn't true, not if he thought Wolf would hurt me. I regretted that yip of possession, even though I was pretty sure that I'd do it again in the same circumstances. I didn't like anyone except me having their hands all over him. There had been possession in Wolf's touch, and Adam belonged to me.
"You have left her with the river's mark," said the cowboy Indian in the earth-tone clothes. His voice was silky smooth and beautiful.
"I have, Snake," said Coyote. "Because I have killed the river devil before, she cannot take over Mercy as she does everyone else. But Mercy is now something of interest to the river devil, something that we've already proved can get her attention and bring her to where we want her in pretty short order. The river devil doesn't like its prey to get away from it, and she wants it back."
He looked at me.
"There are a lot of miles of water between the Dalles and John Day."
And it hadn't taken her 10 minutes to find me when Coyote threw me in the river. He'd been right. We had learned a lot from that. Calvin had returned from wherever he'd gone. He had a couple of blankets, which he gave to Fred and Hank. Hank took one with a nod of thanks. But Fred just changed back into a hawk and flew up to perch next to one of the candles on a nearby standing stone. The old man in white hunting leather said,
"I think it might be better to let River Devil have her way. When she has eaten the whole world, it can be made anew again."
"You sound so certain," said Gordon in an interested voice. "Are you? I don't think it is as easy as all that."
The old man growled at him, a big rumbling sound that was somehow fitting coming from that fierce old body.
"Friend Bear," said Coyote, "change is not bad. Change is just change. Startling to those of us who go away, then come back after a long time, yes. But it is not evil."
"Look at the pollution."
Bear took a breath, as if he could smell smog out there 100 miles from anywhere. My nose is very good, and I would have called his bluff if I could have talked.
"The roads. The railroads. Look at the houses upon houses that destroy hunting ground and leave only a tiny fraction of the forests free. Wolf has said that Mother Earth cannot move underneath the cement and steel, and I say that he is right."
"There are things that are bad," Coyote said. "But there were bad things then, too. Starving times, freezing times, times of sickness. There are good things here." He waved a hand at Wolf. "Look at the clothes you wear. That suit is silk and wool woven in a fashion that was not possible a few centuries ago. All change brings bad things and good things to replace the bad and good things that were before. It is natural to look back and say it was better before, but that does not make it true. Different is not worse. It is just different."
"There is some truth in what you say, Coyote."
Wolf was petting his suit jacket with the same sort of possessiveness he'd shown toward Adam.
"I don't like it here," said the man in the darker leathers. He sounded unhappy and uneasy. "Bobcat."
Coyote liked this one. I could tell by the tone of his voice. "There are good hunting grounds here. You just have to find them, as was always true. The sun is still warm, and flowers still smell sweet."
"You should take him to Disneyland," suggested Gordon. "Or I could. I like Disneyland."
The purely human contingent had been very quiet up to this point, but now Calvin spoke.
If you give it a chance, I think you would find it isn't horrible here.
The man with the belt with the brass bells put an arm around Bobcat.
The problem is this, Bobcat. Things change whether you want them to or not, unless you are dead.
His voice was hoarse, like a 3-pack-a-day-for-20-years smoker.
Don't hold so hard to the past that you die with it.
He looked at Coyote.
There is no sense in this, though. We have all agreed to do as you asked, or we would not be here. Where and when?
As Raven says, agreed Coyote formally.
Then he described how to find our campsite in a way that ravens, bobcats, wolves, snakes, and bears could find it. When he was finished, he said,
As for when, the sooner the better, I think. Tomorrow?
After dark, said Jim. Calvin says the FBI are looking for whoever is responsible for the killing field that this river has become. You don't want them showing up at the wrong time.
He looked at Raven and said,
Warriors with bang sticks who are river marked is a bad idea.
Raven smiled at him.
I do know who the FBI are, he told Jim. Coyote is not the only one who still wanders.
While they were talking, the others had left. Some of them seemed to walk away, but I saw Wolf disappear, probably because he did it while still staring at Adam, who belonged to me.
Thank you, Raven,
said Coyote after a quick glance to see that the other animal spirits, including Gordon, were gone.
We may all die forever tomorrow, old friend, said Raven, but it will be interesting anyway.
Adam and I left to change and get dressed too, but I was the only one doing any changing. Adam's panicked gaze met mine as I was putting on my jeans. Hold on, I told him. There's help about. I pulled on my clothes, stuck my shoes on my feet, and grabbed Adam's clothes as fast as I could. Then I bounded back up the hill, hoping like heck that Coyote hadn't already vanished like the rest of them. Why I was so sure that Coyote knew anything about werewolves was a mystery to me, but it seemed right. He'd known Adam would have trouble shifting when the earth magic was singing. The candles were all out. Jim and Calvin were gone. Fred and Hank had left before we'd headed out to change. Stonehenge looked deserted. Coyote, I called.
Mercy?
I'd been almost certain he was gone, but he and Raven had apparently been sitting on the altar playing a card game in the dark. Hard to believe I'd missed them, but Coyote was that sort, so I didn't worry about it. I had other things on my mind. Adam can't change back. Would the earth magic have done something that keeps him from shifting?
He can't change back to human.
Coyote folded up his hand of cards and set them on the bronze plaque, giving us his full attention.
That's awkward, this being your honeymoon.
He can't change, I said, ignoring the last sentence. Is it the earth magic? Will the effects go away after we leave here? Coyote considered it.
The earth magic shouldn't do anything unless directed by a shaman, and I think Jim likes you.
Raven gave his head a bird-like twitch.
It wasn't Jim, and it wasn't the earth magic.
His voice left no room for doubt.
Your werewolf bit our wolf, remember?
Raven grinned at me, a big warm expression that was infinitely reassuring, though I could think of no reason I should trust him.
Wolf takes things like that personally, but he's not one to cling to his angers either.
His face became a little pensive.
Not like Owl.
Coyote snorted.
He's still bearing a grudge for that. That happened a long, long time ago. How was I to know that it was his favorite thing?
Raven's eyes twinkled with starlight.
It was shiny.
He glanced at me.
But it was heavy, so I dropped it in the ocean. It was an accident.
You think that this is something Wolf did? I had a good grip on the ruff around Adam's neck. It was a habit I'd developed over the past few months, because I found it reassuring. Adam didn't look worried or nervous, but he wouldn't, not in front of people who were essentially strangers. I was doing the worried and nervous for both of us. A werewolf can stay wolf for a while. A couple of days, no trouble. A few weeks, well, not so good, but most of them will be okay afterward. Months were possible, one or two. After that, he would be all wolf with no human. Bran's son Samuel had experienced that. and his wolf had behaved in a mostly civilized fashion for a couple of weeks without losing it, astonishing everyone. It was unlikely that Adam, who had not seen his first century, could do the same. "How long?" I asked. Coyote sighed.
"Mercedes, it takes power to pull forward Adam's wolf so strongly that his human half cannot change. None of us has a lot of that kind of power over here anymore, which is probably why Wolf did it, to show that he is not to be trifled with."
Coyote looked at Adam.
"He could have killed you had he desired. It would have been easier. After tomorrow's battle, I should be very surprised if Wolf's punishment does not fade away. It would be easy to be angry with him, but he and the others have agreed to sacrifice themselves. It is, I think, unlikely that he will return to this place soon after that." "If ever," agreed Raven quietly.
He had picked up all the cards and laid out a solitaire pattern. Spider, I thought, or some variant.
"So give him his dignity and don't worry."
"Thank you," I told them both. I started to go, then I remembered something. "Hey, Coyote." He had just scooped up the cards again and was in the middle of shuffling.
"Yes?"
"Your sisters told me to tell you that they thought your plan was a good one."
"Did they tell you what it was?"
He resumed shuffling, but there was a rapidity to his movement that told me he was feeling something strongly. "Yes?" I took a deep breath. "Weak link here, I think, but I'll do my best." He smiled.
"Yes, I expect you will."
When something woke me up from a sound sleep in the middle of the night, I assumed it was Coyote again. This time, I woke Adam up, too. "Someone wants me outside," I told him, tapping my head. "I think Coyote might want to talk again." When I got out of bed, I tripped over the walking stick. I picked it up gently, instead of swearing at it, and leaned it against the wall. Swearing at ancient artifacts seemed a little unwise. Not something I'd do unless I'd carefully considered all the possible effects. Adam and I made our way out to the swimming hole, where the call was coming from. But it wasn't Coyote. Out in the darkness, I could see her, or at least her wake. The roiling water burbled and swirled as she swam in lazy circles.
"Mercedes Thompson."
Her voice was in my head. I sat down on the ground with a thump, in the faint hope that it would somehow make it harder for her to get me into the water. Coyote had been too precipitous in declaring me immune to her charms. Perhaps she couldn't make me drown my own children, and Jesse, thank goodness, was 100 miles away, but she could call me out to her, and she could speak to me. I thought as hard as I could, "Go die."
"Mercedes," she said again,
her voice like a cool liquid in my head, giving me the mother of all ice cream headaches.
"Are you listening to me? Do you see what I want you to see?"
"Do you hear her?" I asked Adam. He looked out toward the river. "No." I tapped him, then tapped my head. "She's in here." Her teeth gleamed white in the darkness.
"Mackenzie Heppner was 8 years old as of 4 days ago. She was supposed to be in the tent with her little brother, but something had woken her up. She hitched up her nightgown and waded in the cold water. On her arm she could see the mark that weed had left when she went swimming too far out in the river, and her stepdad had to swim out and rescue her. It made her reconsider how she felt about her stepdad. He hadn't even yelled at her, just hugged her. It took her a while to figure out he was scared, too. Do you see what I want you to see, Mercedes?"
My breath started coming in panicked gulps. I hadn't been just dreaming about the ill-fated Janice and her family. The river devil had fed me the details afterward. Maybe that hadn't been on purpose. Maybe. But they had been real, and this 8-year-old named Mackenzie was real, too. I hid my forehead against Adam and told him what was happening, giving him the words when she gave words to me, describing the rest. He whined unhappily.
"Gesture to me if you see what I want you to see." "Did you see her?"
Evidently, she couldn't read my thoughts. Like Bran, she could only shove things at me.
Mackenzie's feet were numb, and the rocks made the bottoms hurt. She shouldn't be out here in the river in the dark. She knew it was against the rules.
I waved my hand weakly. I didn't want to know any more about a child who was going to walk into the river and get eaten.
I will let her live.
She says she'll let the child live, I told Adam. He got it, I think, before I did, because he lunged up and snarled at her, at me, then bumped me with a hip in a clear order to go back to the trailer. I felt her laughter. She'd seen Adam's reaction. She knew I'd heard her.
Bargain. A bargain. A bargain. You for her. You come die tonight. And I will let the little girl and her little brother live.
Adam planted himself between me and the river devil. She offers a bargain, I told him. Me for the little girl and, apparently, her brother. If I die, they won't. Adam looked at me, his heart in his eyes. She's 8, I told him. Just. Yesterday her stepfather proved that he might be okay. She's willing to give him a chance. She has a younger brother that she could go get and bring with her. I swallowed. What would you do, Adam? Would you die so that little girl could live? I knew the answer, and from his body language, so did he. Then he looked at the monster out in the water and back to me with a flicker of his ears. He couldn't do it, because she didn't want him. I couldn't do it either, no matter how much I wanted to. Without me, Coyote's plan wouldn't work. Would she lie? I said, while the river devil chanted her promises in my head. I'm worth more to her than the child, I think. She knows about Coyote and his interest in me, and it worries her. But after I'm dead, would she keep her word? Who would know?
She would keep her word. Coyote came up to stand beside Adam. I can't let you do it, anyway.
I know. Your sister's made it clear that you need me.
Adam whined again.
I'll tell you about them, I promised. I'd forgotten to let him know what had happened. We'd both been tired.
Choose Mercedes.
For an ancient evil, she speaks awfully good English, I said.
She's been eating English-speaking people. Coyote sat next to me.
Can you hear her? I asked. He shook his head.
No, she can't mark me.
Could you save her? I asked Coyote. Could you save that little girl? Didn't you carve the way for the waters to flow and move mountains? Raven hung the stars.
That was a long time ago, under the Great Spirit's direction, he said, sounding sad. I'm on my own here.
Why doesn't the Great Spirit take care of this?
Why should he? Coyote asked. All that is mortal dies. Death is not such a bad thing. What would be a bad thing would be living without challenges, without knowing defeat. We cannot know what victory is. There is no life without death.
I like my God better than I like yours, I told him.
Don't you know, child? He is one and the same.
Coyote watched the river devil wait for my response.
The Great Spirit has given us our wits and our courage. He sends helpers and counsel. He sent me to you, didn't he? I talked to my sisters tonight. It was a good thing.
Can you save this girl?
Do you know where she is?
A campground near the river, I said. But was it a campground? There were a lot of places you could just go camping. No.
Then, no.
Damn it, I said.
You or they die.
Bargain.
You die, they live.
Is there anyone else who could take my role? I asked.
None that I know of. I was surprised that you were not controlled by her mark. You are the only creature who is wholly of this realm that I have seen resist her.
If I weren't here, what would you do? He sighed.
One of us would take your place, but there are only 7 of us who can or will help. I believe that a time will come when the Great Spirit will send us back out into the world again, entrusted with tasks to accomplish. But many of us were hurt when the Europeans swept through here. Disease took so many of our children. Then the vampires singled out those who managed to survive and brought more death upon them.
He sighed.
We were allowed to retreat and lick our wounds, and for many, it will take the Great Spirit to pry them out of their safe dens.
He scuffed his bare foot on the ground, rolling a rock a dozen feet.
I won't lie. We may not have enough to do what we need, even with you.
Without you?
He shook his head.
Mercedes!
The demand was angry and impatient. I picked up a rock and chucked it in the river as my answer.
Coward, to save yourself at the expense of a child. You shall see what you have done.
I learned a lot in the next 15 or 20 minutes. I learned that Mackenzie's little brother was named Kurt, like my stepfather. He was 4, and marked as Mackenzie was, so he didn't fight when his sister carried him on her hip out into the river. As a treat, especially for me, I think, the river devil released her hold on their minds before she killed them. But maybe it was because Mackenzie's screams had her parents tearing out of their tent and into the water after them. I learned that I could have exchanged my life for 4 people's lives. 4.
Chapter 12. I didn't sleep. What was the point? I could have nightmares while I was awake just as well as when I was asleep. I had made the right decision, the only decision, but that didn't make it any easier to live with the deaths of 4 people I could have saved. I fed Adam, and when he grunted at me, I fed myself too. I had to keep my strength up. If 4 people had died to give me a chance to help kill the river devil, it wouldn't do to fail because I hadn't eaten. About 5 a.m., when the first pale hint of dawn touched the sky, Adam and I got in the truck and headed back up to Stonehenge. Without Adam to converse with and nothing much to do, I would drive us both crazy if we stayed at the campsite. Stonehenge needed to be cleaned up. I could do that and save Jim and Calvin some work. It had been nearly 2 a.m. when we'd packed up that morning, and Jim had looked like a man who'd been rode hard and put away wet. I didn't expect him to arrive until a more civilized hour. But he and Calvin drove up about 10 minutes after I finally found the step stool so I could get high enough to remove the candles from the tops of the standing stones. Chin-ups on 45 monoliths, I counted them while contemplating how to get the candles down, had struck me as too energetically taxing when I had a monster to kill later. Calvin waved at me and hopped in the back of the truck to grab 2 boxes. He jumped back out and trotted over while Jim got out of the truck and shut the door.
"Hey," said Calvin. "Didn't expect..."
He saw Adam and stopped dead.
What's wrong with him?"
Even happy werewolves are scary in broad daylight if your eyes let you really see what they are. Adam was not a happy werewolf.
"Wolf took offense at the bite," I said, "so Adam can't change back to human right now."
"Jeez," said Calvin, "that sucks, and it's your honeymoon."
Then his face flushed darker with embarrassment. That was not what had Adam's hackles up, though. I told him about Coyote's sister after Coyote left, and whispering very quietly what the plan to kill the monster was. Adam couldn't talk to tell me what he thought. I knew that he understood that it was the best plan we could come up with. I also knew that he didn't like it. At all. Amazing what body language can convey.
"Coyote is sure it is temporary," I told him, getting the next candle down while Calvin started to set them in the boxes he'd brought. The boxes were like the ones moving companies use to pack glasses, with cardboard inserts that kept each of the candles separate from the others. "Just don't look him in the eyes, okay?" It took us about 1.5 hours to get the place cleaned up and looking the way it had before we'd come. Hardest was getting the coarse dark gravel out of the much finer pale gravel. "You could have used a plywood board," I told Jim, who was sitting on the altar criticizing Calvin and me while we picked up gravel 1 piece at a time and put it in a wheelbarrow.
"No," he said, "I could not have. The fire had to rest on earth. Even the gravel was cheating a bit."
"Next time."
Even Calvin the ever-cheerful was getting grumpy.
"Next time. I vote we put the fire on the ground. I'll dig it out afterward and put fresh gravel that matches the original back over the top."
Jim grunted.
"That is more work. We did it that way for a few years until I started to do it this way."
"What about a gunny sack?" I asked. "Something porous but not so loose a weave that the big gravel can drop through. Or use gravel that would blend in better with what is already here."
Might work, agreed Jim. But then what would I use to keep my apprentice busy? I suppose I could do what my teacher did and teach him beading.
I'll pick up gravel, Uncle, thank you, Calvin said meekly.
The medicine man laughed.
I thought you might feel that way.
I stopped at the gas station in Biggs and got a pair of ice cream cones, banana and strawberry, and a notebook. We ate the ice cream in the truck until Adam was finished with his strawberry cone because I couldn't feed myself and Adam and drive at the same time. As I drove back over the bridge, still licking my banana ice cream, I could see the Maryhill campground full of tents, trailers, and RVs. Had Mackenzie been staying there with her family? Or had they been somewhere more private? I hadn't noticed any other campers. But if it had been the Maryhill campground, Coyote might have been able to get to her in time to save her while I kept River Devil busy. If she'd been at the Maryhill campground and we had known where she was. I drove back to camp and started writing. A letter to my mother and one to each of my sisters. I did not, of course, mention Coyote. A long letter to Samuel and Bran. A letter to Jesse. A letter to Stefan. A lot of pages that I'd burn if I survived the night. Jesse called Adam's phone while I was in the middle of writing the letter to her. He brought his phone to me so I could answer it, after a little fumbling.
I need Daddy, Jesse said intensely. Now!
He can't talk. Adam put his chin on my leg.
I don't care. Take the phone to him in the bathroom.
He's a wolf, Jesse, I told her patiently. He can't talk. Is there something I can do for you?
Why is he a wolf? She said, sounding shocked. It's your honeymoon.
Jesse, much as I'd love to discuss my honeymoon with you, what do you need?
It's Daryl, she wailed. He's impossible. Arielle left to do something or other, and he says I can't go shopping. My favorite store has a 4-hour sale from noon to 4, and he won't let me go.
Jesse, to my certain knowledge, had never cared about shopping. There were other things she did worry about, and I could think of only one of them that would put that frantic tone in her voice. Gabriel wants to go do something, I interpreted. Maybe a movie? Daryl would be an inconvenience, and you thought if you figured out something that he would not do, he'd let you do it without him.
Daryl's right here, you know, she said.
Your father might have bought your story, but I doubt it, I told her. Where are you going?
Daryl critiques movies, she said, loudly, during the movie. And Gabriel...
Gabriel had changed in the last half year. He'd been kicked out of his house by a mother he loved, and who loved him back, that was part of the problem, and held captive by a fairy queen. Things like that change a person. Mostly he was a little more wary and a lot more somber. Gabriel was living in the house that replaced my old one, so he and Jesse were now neighbors. But he'd lost the easy confidence that everything would turn out right, once he'd seen the monsters being monsters. Around some of the werewolves he was very cautious. Adam didn't seem to bother him, but Daryl did.
How about Colin Warren? I asked.
Warren had that whole, aw shucks, ma'am, going for him, and was nearly as good at hiding his dominance as Bran. People tended to like Warren, and he and Gabriel got on just fine. There was a little silence.
Kyle's important, Mercy. He and Warren can't just take the time to go to a movie with a couple of kids.
I laughed, and Adam sneezed. Did you hear that, Daryl? Kyle's important.
Good to know someone is important around here, he grumbled.
He wasn't angry, though. Daryl had a PhD and worked in a federally funded think tank as an analyst of things too complex for most people's brains. He and his maid Aurielle had become Jessie's de facto babysitters when her mother left because female werewolves were few and far between. Adam's pack only had two. And Daryl was Adam's second in command. A wolf more than up to taking on anyone who might try to hurt the daughter of the Columbia Basin Pack's alpha.
I'll call them, Daryl said. Now that I know what the trouble is, you could have told me, Jesse.
I didn't want to hurt your feelings, Jesse muttered. It's not that he doesn't like you.
I know exactly what it's about.
Daryl's voice was so deep it rumbled.
It's okay. I don't mind scaring people. I especially don't mind scaring your boyfriends.
Everything good now? I asked.
I guess, Jesse said.
If Kyle and Warren can't go, check with Samuel and Ariana.
I'll do that, said Daryl.
Love you, Jesse. I kept it casual. See you.
Probably. Maybe. The death of 8-year-old Mackenzie in the wee small hours this morning had taken the edge off my usual optimism.
Tell Daddy he better not spend the whole honeymoon in wolf shape, Jessie said. Love you both.
Adam had been reading my letter. I finally figured out how to hang up his phone, then met his eyes. I'm not planning on dying, I told him. But, Mr. Always Prepared for Anything, there are things I'd like to tell people if I do. Like I love them. Like someone needed to watch out for Stefan, who still didn't seem to be doing too well. Warren had called with an update a couple of days ago, and reported that Stefan's people seemed to be better. Stefan had collected a couple of people in Portland, but he was still too thin. Warren and Ben would be taking turns dropping by and feeding Stefan themselves, but that was a temporary fix. And someone needed to wait about 10 more years, then track down the grown-up kids who belonged to that poor trucker who'd been framed for murders committed by a vampire, and tell them he hadn't suddenly gone crazy and killed a bunch of innocent people. Those kinds of things needed to be taken care of, if I wasn't there to do it. Adam was restless and angry, so I sent him out to hunt something. Maybe killing something would make him feel better. I wrote his letter while he was gone. When I was through, I lay down on the bed and tried to figure out some other way out of this disaster. Calling the werewolves for help was out. The Fae... Z was my friend. I could call Z. I considered it. Was it a good idea? Not if the River Devil could mark the Fae, I realized. Fae were not proof against magic. I'd seen a fairy queen force other Fae to worship her, and some of those had been fairly powerful. If the River Devil could suborn Z, I've only seen Z without his glamour a couple of times, and it was impressive. More impressive was the way the other Fae treated him, wary respect, even from the Grey Lords themselves. If he had to obey the River Devil, it would not be a good thing. So, Coyote and his kinfolk were going to get themselves eaten. And heaven help anyone left if I didn't kill the monster. I was going to swim over and try to take it out with a flint knife. Presumably Coyote would provide that. Scuba gear might be good. I seem to remember... I went to the bench in the kitchen area and pulled up the cushion and set it aside. The hard top of the bench opened, revealing 2 complete sets of snorkeling gear. I'd noticed it when I was exploring the trailer, and now it made me wonder just how much Yo-Yo Girl had seen in her vision. It wouldn't have been Adam who put them there. I know a couple of adrenaline-junkie werewolves who scuba, but none that snorkel. It is not, strictly speaking, necessary to be able to swim when scuba diving, where sinking and rising are controlled by weight belts and an air-filled vest. I pulled out a pair of water socks that looked to be my size and the smaller of the sets of fins. The snorkel I left where it was. My old college roommate had spent an entire summer trying to teach me to snorkel. We proved that the fins greatly increased my speed in the water, and that the snorkel greatly increased the chance of my drowning myself. Hank Owens called as I was closing up the compartment under the bench and asked for Adam. He's out running, I told him.
Would you give him my apologies, ma'am? First time I've ever shot a civilian.
You didn't shoot him on purpose, I said.
Not to argue, ma'am, he said gently. But I pointed my gun at him and pulled the trigger. That's as on purpose as it gets.
I sensed we could argue back and forth all day. Fine. I don't think you owe him an apology. He won't think you owe him an apology, but I will tell him you offered it. How are you doing? That sand and drop thing Hawk did to you didn't look very pleasant.
No, ma'am, but I'm fine.
Good.
Thank you for conveying my message, ma'am.
You're very welcome. By the time Adam came back, I had decided that Coyote's plan stood as good a chance as any, and that I was as prepared as I was going to be. "Catch anything?" I asked. He shook his head. Then he shook everything else. "Hank called to apologize for shooting you." He flattened his ears. "That's what I told him, but he seemed to feel the need, so I told him I'd let you know." I had done all I could. If we stayed here, all I was going to do was lapse into a funk that Adam was only too likely to join.
Hey, Adam, let's go out to lunch.
This might be my last day on Earth, and I refused to spend it moping around, even if I'd had to let 4 people die this morning to preserve my life. I swallowed down my gorge. Adam woofed in agreement to my proposal and escorted me out to the truck. We ate takeout. Most restaurants don't let dogs in. We drove to the first pretty place I saw and ate fast food tacos with flowers blooming all around us. The seagulls mostly left us alone because of Adam. When we were through eating, I bundled up the garbage and lay down with my head on Adam and went to sleep, soaking up the heat of the day like a balm to my soul. And I didn't dream at all, that I remember. I woke with Adam licking my face. It felt a little hot. I don't sunburn much, but falling asleep in the middle of a hot summer afternoon just might do it. I touched my face with my fingertips, but it didn't seem sore, just warm.
You ought to use sunscreen if you're going to sleep outside like this. Someday you might not have a fairy godfather to come and take care of the sunburn.
Coyote sat next to us, chewing on a piece of grass.
Are you ready?
I don't know how long I'd been there, but the sun was nearly down. I sat up. Dinner time had come and gone, but I wasn't hungry. The werewolf would be another matter. Adam will need more food, I said, eyeing him sideways. But yes, I'm as ready as I'm going to get.
Why are you looking at me like that? He asked.
I didn't know that you also played fairy godfather.
It's a secondary thing, he said modestly, bouncing to his feet. Let's go get some food.
Coyote rode in the back seat and ate twice what Adam did, and that was saying something.
I've got knives for you, he said, licking the salt from the last French fry off his fingers.
Knives?
Yes. Last time I did this it took 9 blades, so I brought you 12. They are obsidian. Be careful you don't slice yourself while you're at it. My sisters made the sheath and the knives, so they are as sharp as any knife I've seen. Remember, obsidian is brittle and doesn't hold an edge forever, which is why I brought you so many.
All right, I said. I realized that I hadn't lied to Coyote back in the little park. I was ready. The nap in the sun with Adam's heartbeat in my ear had steadied me, had given me courage. Succeed or fail, I would do my best to make sure that the river devil died tonight. That was all anyone could do. There were 7 of them waiting for us at our trailer. Evidently Hawk had decided to help as well. They'd let themselves in and help themselves to food, drink, and, from the looks of it, every sweet thing in the place. It looked like an invasion of pirates. If I'd known what they liked, I'd have brought back a couple of dozen donuts. Dark was falling. No one said much, but when the sun touched the western horizon, clothing disappeared as they garbed themselves in things suitable to war. Like the old clans of the Scots, for most of the tribes of the Americas, war meant as close to naked as makes no never mind. Apparently age dropped away, and the animal spirits who walked out to the river with me wore bodies as smoothly muscled as any werewolves. They also were furred or feathered as their aspect demanded, and their heads were those of beasts, their true shapes, as beautiful and strange as anything I have ever seen. It reminded me of the Egyptian gods. I'd never thought about the similarity before. They went armed, too, all but the birds who would fight the battle from the air in their animal forms. There were no passive sacrifices here. They would go fighting, but none of them seemed to believe that they wouldn't go down. They all knew the river devil better than I. I wore my old blue tank swimsuit with a soft leather sheath packed with obsidian knives. The sheath wrapped around me like a snug Miss America sash or one of those old bandolier bullet belts. The knives were stuck in and held tightly by the pale, well-tanned leather of the sheath. They didn't look a great deal like a normal knife, or even the knives Coyote had drawn to drive the river devil back to the water. These were knives like the one Gordon had used to dig the bullet out of Adam. Using them would be more like using the blade of a box cutter than anything else. There was no handle, just a blunt side that was safe to hold, and a very sharp side for cutting. Over the top of the bandolier, I wore one of Adam's dark gray dress shirts. No sense advertising our plans. Coyote nodded at me, and I walked out into the river. Adam paced unhappily back and forth on the shore just beyond where the river devil had landed, so he would be out of her reach. He hadn't been happy about agreeing to stay out of the river, but he wasn't stupid. We couldn't risk that she could gain control of him, as she had Hank. The plan was for me to stay safe until it was my turn to act, but still we needed me to be the bait that drew her in close. We decided, Coyote and I, that I should go in no farther than knee-deep, which put me about 15 feet from shore. So close, Coyote was confident he could grab me before she pulled me out into the deep water. Knee-deep meant the entirety of the river mark on my leg was underwater. Raven took to the skies to see if he could spot her from the air when she came, though it was unlikely. The night-dark river didn't give up her secrets easily. I was ready. 10 minutes came and went. Nothing happened. Nothing except that I was getting cold. And scared, because I'm not stupid. Somewhere in this river was a monster who wanted to eat me, and I was daring her to do just that. I looked at the shoreline, but no one seemed impatient, except Adam. Even with him, it was not so much impatience as growing frustration. Raven waved, and I waved in return before the feeling of having nothing to watch my back made me turn around again. "She's not stupid," I muttered to myself as I stared at the dark water. "She's got to be wondering what I'm doing going out into the river again after this morning." I tried to put myself inside her head. I wouldn't come to her to save a child, but now I'm cavorting about in the water. Is this woman merely stupid, she'll wonder? Is Mercedes the bait for one of Coyote's traps? He's killed her before, but she is stronger now, and he weaker. Even if it is a trap, what does she have to fear? I hoped that she would be more arrogant than suspicious. Maybe she can sense the assault team on the shore. I thought about it for a minute. But that shouldn't worry her. None of them think they have a chance of killing her. She probably doesn't think they can either. Their fatality had surprised me a little. I know a bit about warriors and testosterone, and Coyote and his friends were the first and definitely had the second. Good warriors understand how to assess risk, but they also tend to beat their chests and brag a bit. Coyote certainly didn't seem to eschew bragging, but no one was predicting victory here. After a half hour, I decided that knee-deep wasn't working. I took a deep breath and held it, listening intently to the river. Nothing. Or at least nothing I could distinguish from the normal sounds. The problem was that there was too much noise. Water brushing the shore, night birds and insects hunting food or mates. Even the highways all worked to camouflage any sound the river devil might make. I stared out at the far shore and imagined her out there, watching me and waiting. I took another step out, feeling the ground under my feet start to drop off. Another step, and I was abruptly waist deep. From the shore, Adam howled. I turned around and waved to them to show that the move had been voluntary. "Knee-deep isn't working," I said. "I thought I'd try a little deeper." 2 steps was all it had taken. I was still quite close to shore. An otter head popped up about 10 feet from me, looking smug. He couldn't hurt me here in the swimming area, according to Uncle Mike. But where the otters were, quite often the river devil was as well. I lost my nerve and turned to go back, and something wrapped around one ankle and hauled me through the water like a water ski boat. Something that might have been Coyote's hand brushed mine, then was gone. I spread my body out, trying to create as much drag as I could, even as I fumbled with Adam's shirt, trying to get it open enough to get at the knives. I knew what she was doing. I'd seen her do it to others. I had no intention of being her meal, but I wasn't sure if I'd have time to do anything to stop it. I had to try. If I died first, the whole enterprise was at risk. So I concentrated on the advice Sensei Johansson had once told me was the first and most important way to win a sparring match. Be ready. The river devil had pulled me deep under the surface, and it was dark. I was watching for her, and I saw nothing, but I felt the change in the currents of the water as she opened her mouth.
"You I shall consume with much pleasure," the river devil told me. "And then I shall know how you defy me when no other mortal thing has. I shall learn, and learning grow stronger." "Mercy!"
It was Adam, his voice a roar in my head, overwhelming her words so I could move again. More by luck than by skill, though I was trying to feel for anything I could grab, My free foot caught the outside of a tooth that was longer than my shin bone, and I grabbed another upper tooth with my left hand and stopped myself, arching my body away from her.
"Mercedes!"
His voice was a howl of grief that I couldn't answer, not if I wanted to save myself. I remembered from seeing her head above the water that the teeth in the front of her mouth were spiky and stuck out almost like the quills of a porcupine. They were also long, and I hoped that she couldn't open her mouth wide enough to engulf me as long as I kept my feet braced on the outside of her lower jaw and my grip on the upper tooth.
"You make things harder than they should be," she told me.
"You are caught and cannot get away." She snapped her teeth together with wicked speed, but I am wicked fast, too. I bent and straightened with her. The water helped as well. When she snapped her mouth closed, the water pushed out. She changed tactics and tried to use her tentacle to shake me loose. I noticed that this close to her, the tentacle seemed to be operating a little less efficiently, like a rubber band that was too loose. It could hold on to me, it could pull me, but it couldn't push me. I didn't know why she didn't try to grab me with another tentacle. Maybe she was just too angry right now. But when she did, I was dead. If this stalemate lasted much longer, I was dead anyway. My abilities didn't extend to breathing water, and I'd been underwater for a while. On a particularly hard jerk, I took a chance and stopped resisting with my legs. She was pulling so hard that she yanked my legs up past her upper teeth. She quit pulling as soon as she realized what she had done, but too late. She'd already given me enough slack to twist my tentacle-caught leg around one of the long, spike-like teeth at the front of her mouth. The next time she pulled her tentacle, she'd be pulling on her own tooth instead of my leg. All well and good, but if I didn't get air soon, all the cleverness in the world wouldn't help me. I wiggled until I was on top of her muzzle instead of in front of it. I'd managed to pull open Adam's shirt while she was hauling me to her, and now I slipped a knife out of the bandolier and sliced the tentacle just around my ankle. Her tentacles must have been extremely sensitive. Just as she had when Adam freed me, she jerked her head up out of the water. Since I was on top, the motion catapulted me out of the river, off her head, and into the air. I landed about 15 feet from where I'd started and plunged back into the water. She'd thrown me upstream, so the current would bring me right back to her. I broke surface again just about the time she let loose with a shriek that hurt my ears. She saw me and dropped back into the water, disappearing under the surface. I swam as fast as I could, but not being a fish, I was pretty sure I was going to be food. Something grabbed my shoulders, and I screamed, reaching up to grab whatever it was as it yanked me out of the water. I quit screaming as the river devil's open mouth appeared on the surface of the water below my toes, which were now about 5 feet in the air. My hands closed around two leather-covered, steel-strong bones that could only be the legs of a very, very big predatory bird.
"My food! My food! Thief!"
The river devil's voice in my head made me tighten my grip on the great bird's legs and draw my feet up as far as I could. He shouldn't have been able to bear my weight, even as big as he was, and with his wings outspread, he was huge. But he wasn't just a Thunderbird. He was Thunderbird, and I suppose that made a difference. The river devil broke the surface, but had misjudged her strike, because Thunderbird swooped sideways at the last moment. She hung where she was a moment before toppling sideways and crashing into the river like a whale breaching. Thunderbird carried me to the river's edge and dropped me gently next to where Adam should have been waiting, and wasn't.
"Adam!"
I shrieked, wiping the water out of my eyes. She couldn't have him. He was mine. I staggered into a run toward the river about the time Adam emerged, knocking me over and drenching me further with the water held by his fur. I swore at him.
"You have got to stay out of the water," I told him through gritted, chattering teeth. "If she gets you, she won't have to bother killing me. She can make you do it."
It scared me. I understood why he'd done it, understood it viscerally, but he had to stay out of the river. I tried to roll out from under him, but a big paw on my shoulder held me down, and he snarled at me. That's when I realized that I wasn't dealing with Adam. Adam knew why he had to stay out of the water. But the wolf didn't understand, and the wolf had taken over. We didn't have time for this. I had to get my fins on and be ready to swim out to wherever the river devil was when she went comatose. I heard a war cry. Someone had made it out to her.
Adam, I said, let me up.
Instead, he lay down on top of me. Damn wolf. If Adam had been in his human shape, the wolf would never have gotten this much of an upper hand. But I knew how to deal with this. If I calmed down, he would too. He was responding as much to the frantic beat of my heart and my fear as he was to seeing me jerked underwater. He hadn't seen me fight underwater with something I couldn't see, where I could only feel those sharp, spiky teeth, and that wasn't going to help me quiet down at all. I closed my eyes and sought that calm place I'd learned to find in the dojo. It came in handy both when working on engines and when dealing with unhappy customers. It took longer than it might have because I couldn't help but listen to the sounds of the battle I couldn't see. But eventually, my pulse settled down, and I was relaxed under Adam.
Okay, I told him. I'm okay. You need to get off of me before I'm squished.
The wolf growled.
Adam, I said sharply, get off me.
He closed his yellow eyes and took a deep breath.
Adam?
When his eyes opened, it was Adam who looked back at me. He stood up and backed off.
Thank you, I said, rolling to my feet a little less gracefully than I meant to.
Out in the river, there was a feeding frenzy going on. There was blood in the water. I could smell it, even though I couldn't see. I could hear the cries of the birds, hawk, raven, and thunderbird, as they attacked from above. But the devil was too far out in the middle of the river. Even with my night vision, I had trouble seeing what was going on. I grabbed my water socks and pulled them on my feet, ignoring the rough tear that wept blood on the foot I'd managed to brace on the river devil's teeth. The fight was moving gradually toward the little swimming hole, and I felt Adam's attention focus as he figured out what she was doing. Our bond allowed me to understand it, too. She was herding them into the cove because she didn't want anyone to escape, and it would make it easier for her to locate body parts if she missed anything. It would make my job easier, too. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to get Adam to let me back in the water. I was pretty sure I was going to be terrified. She was close enough I could see her bright green eyes, which meant that Adam and I were too close to the river. Come on, I said. Let's... There was a tremendous splash, and her head lifted out of the water. Speared on her teeth was a man with a canine head. She opened her mouth as a single tentacle pulled him off the teeth that impaled him. She threw him into the air, and, tipping her head back, caught him in her rear teeth and chewed him to bits. Adam collapsed like a puppet whose strings were cut. Coyote howled a tribute. She had eaten wolf. I didn't know what had happened to Adam. He was breathing. His heart was steady. He was just unconscious. I was kneeling beside him looking for any injury when pain rushed over me, and I understood why he'd fallen. My skin was on fire, and I felt as if someone had poured boiling water over me. I screamed, stumbling to my feet. And this time it was I, tears sliding down my wet face, who howled a tribute, and Coyote, who died. It didn't last long after that. I think that when they were all alive, they'd been able to harry her, to play off one another's strengths. But as they died, they lost the ability to distract her. Raven died trying to keep Snake alive. The distraction allowed Snake to drive his spear deep into her side, but not deep enough. Watching her, I realized why she'd only grabbed me with one tentacle. She could only use one of them at a time. The unused tentacles bobbed about her head as if she had thick wire hair. She dove on top of Snake, and I didn't see him again. The only ones that seemed to be remaining were Thunderbird and Hawk. Thunderbird dove like an F-15, striking with both taloned feet extended. I'd seen him score a deep furrow on her nose a few moments before. But this time, she whipped her tentacle around his legs and snatched him out of the air and into the water. Suddenly, she shrieked. Neither she nor I had seen Hawk, and he'd managed to take out an eye while she was concentrating on Thunderbird. But Hawk's talons were stuck, and she dove abruptly. For a moment, the river was still, and Thunderbird floated alone on the surface, bobbing gently with the current. Then he disappeared under the water, tugged by something underneath him.
Wait until she surfaces and is still, Coyote had cautioned me as he ate a couple of fast food burgers in the back seat of the truck, one greasy sandwich in each hand.
If there aren't enough of us to cause her to go belly up, there's no sense in you dying, too.
I'd asked him what to do if she didn't react the way he'd hoped.
Maybe then it might be time to bring in the nuclear warheads, he'd said.
For all that there was a smile on his face, I had been pretty sure he hadn't been joking. I stripped off Adam's shirt. When I saw blood, I realized that Thunderbird had opened up a good slice under one arm when he rescued me. Under the circumstances, I wasn't going to complain. I checked the knife belt. There were a few knives missing, but I still had 8 left. Hopefully, that would be enough. I waded out into the river until I was knee-deep, then put on the long, bright pink fins. And then I waited, nearly in the same spot as I'd waited before. I'd have expected that the water would keep the smell of carnage to a minimum, but I could smell blood. Something bumped my knee, and I fell over backward trying to scramble away in my clumsy fins, landing with a splash on my backside. The bandolier jerked, and I grabbed the otter with one hand and threw him as far as I could before I stood up. I checked the sheath, but it seemed to be okay except for a bite mark on one edge. There were still 8 knives. A long, pale shape appeared on the surface about 10 feet from me. It waved lazily back and forth as the current caught it. It was joined by another, and another. Then her head appeared. Half her head anyway, the rest lurking beneath the water. One eye skyward and her mouth open wide. Finally, her body surfaced, limp and huge. Really, really huge. I was pretty sure it was longer than Coyote's estimate of 90-odd feet. Showtime. I waded out, ignoring the otterkin who were circling me. If they could have attacked me before this, they would have. Whatever the Fae had done to this cove, it was serving my purposes now. As soon as the water was thigh-deep, I dove forward and let the fins do the work of getting me to the river devil. I expected that I would have to chase her downstream, but her greed for the last bit of flesh kept her in the backwater of the swimming cove. It didn't matter for my task, but if I was successful, it might mean that I'd have a lot easier time getting back to Adam. I noticed that there were flashing lights on the big highway. Someone had seen a disturbance over here, I thought. We'd known there was a good chance that people would notice eventually. If I killed her, then it wouldn't matter. If I didn't, it would likely give her a whole slew of victims, but I wouldn't care. Coyote might, just might, come back from the dead, but I wouldn't. Her body floated about 3 feet above the river surface, the pectoral fin stuck straight up in the air. I couldn't get to it from the underside. I swam around her head, because it was the shortest way, but I tried not to look too closely at her open mouth. Her bad eye, the eye Hawk had hit, was the one that I could see.
"I don't know how long she'll stay somnolent," Coyote had told me on the way here. "I don't even have a best guess. All we can do is feed her everyone we can, and hope it is enough."
Then he'd grinned.
She might sleep for a week, digesting me alone.
Something brushed against me, and I spun to look, expecting an otterkin. But it was just a feather. A feather as long as my forearm, attached to a piece of skin, and caught between her teeth. I swam faster. Her topside was rougher than her underbelly had been. I might have been able to scale it, but I didn't have to. A spear sunk deep into her flesh gave me an easier way up. I pulled off my fins and gave them to the river before I started to climb. Her skin was cold and faintly mucus. She smelled like fish and magic. I'd thought she would have big scales, but they were small, even finer than a trout's on her underbelly. On her back, they were more like a snake's. I put my hand on the base of her pectoral fin and measured out 4 handspans. Then I pulled out one of my knives and made the first cut. I held my breath as the skin parted reluctantly, but she was still as death. If it weren't for the faint pulse beneath my knees and the fluttering of her gills about 3 feet in front of me, I might have thought she was already dead. The first knife made it through the tough skin before it lost its edge. I didn't notice at first, wasting precious time dragging the dull rock against her unyielding flesh. By the fourth knife,
My cut was nearly a foot deep and twice that wide. I braced it open by tucking my knee in the fissure while watery pink blood filled the bottom. I had to stop and empty it out a couple of times so I could make sure that the knife was still cutting.
"You have to get it wide enough to get to the heart," Coyote had told me.